Chapter 32 of Great Dangers and of Nidong's Wisdom.
Yabona! Cried Nidong, rising joyfully in the stirrups.
Say Yabona! Cried Turakina.
With one hand, she waved goodbye to the party riding off, and with the other, she held back the poodle, who was barking and struggling on his leash.
I'll be back soon, Seven Stars, who was the last to leave, called to him. Mind the sheep and the camels, don't frighten my antelopes, and watch the yurt. Do you hear me?
The dog probably didn't hear everything, for by the time Seven Stars had finished her instructions, Nidong was already fording the Narangal. The water splashed against the horses' bellies, and as it was cold, they rode at a gallop up the other bank. Then they took the caravan road. The wide tire marks of the truck ran along it, and Good Fortune glanced at them from time to time, uttering a curse. Nidong cursed to keep him company, and if curses came to roost, Greencoat and Springtime Snake, wherever they were, should have dropped dead on the spot. Affliction rode silently, lost in thought. He was able to move his arm again, but Good Fortune warned him to keep his hand between the buttons of his tunic as if in a sling. Christian and Big Tiger followed, and behind them came Seven Stars. After about a li, a narrow path bent southward. Good Fortune spat into the last tire track, muttering more maledictions. From then onward, they rode in Indian file. It was cold, and Christian and Big Tiger were freezing and missing their fur coats. There had been frost overnight, and the grass was white. A blue strip of fog lay over the ground, and the few trees showing above it looked as if floating on thin clouds. The ribbon grass, which fringed the path here and there, shone like silver, and Christian, who kept his eyes open, said to Big Tiger, "Do you notice anything?"
"What is there to notice, Kwee Chong?"
"That our horses have got no shoes." Big Tiger looked first at the hoof marks in the soft ground, and then at the horse's hoofs, and when he saw that Christian was right, he asked Seven Stars, who was riding behind him, "Have your horses got no iron shoes?" Seven Stars wanted to know what such things were. When told, she said, "Our horses don't need such things. When they kick, they can kill a person just as quickly as if they wore iron shoes." At this answer, Christian rode on ahead to call Good Fortune to explain to Seven Stars what horseshoes were for. "With us," said Good Fortune, "horses have to go over stones, which would wear off their hoofs if they hadn't iron shoes to protect them. Whereas with you, there is only the steppe or the soft ground of the desert, and very few stones. So the horses' hoofs grow tough and don't need irons."
"Our horses need nothing at all," said Seven Stars proudly.
"And you give them nothing either," retorted Good Fortune reproachfully. "Not even a stable. Your horses stay out in the heat of summer and the snowstorms of winter. The icicles hang from their manes and bellies and jingle like caravan bells. What amazes me is that your horses survive the winter at all."
"They don't all survive it," replied Seven Stars. "Half the foals die every year."
"Are you surprised at that, considering the treatment they get?" cried Good Fortune.
"But we don't treat them at all," said Seven Stars, offended. "They die because the weaker must die. That's all there is to it."
"And when there's snow," asked Christian, "how do they get food?"
"Our horses are smart," said Seven Stars. "They paw the snow away until they find something to eat."
Christian continued his questioning. "But if the snow is very deep?"
"Well, then they have to wait until it melts. But there aren't any heavy snowfalls. I've never yet seen deep snow on the Narangal," said Seven Stars.
"But I've seen many starved horses," muttered Good Fortune, riding on ahead again.
Shortly afterwards, they halted at a copse by a little pond. A cloud of small brown birds whirled up, circled once more over the trees, and flew northward.
"Woodcocks," said Good Fortune. "Yesterday they hadn't arrived yet. Spring has come."
Nidong dismounted and disappeared into the bushes, returning with two spades.
"You'll pardon us," he said to Affliction. "Good Fortune and I went to Olantore yesterday to pack up and hide away the blue tent in case someone should think it belonged to nobody. For there are people," he continued, "who get to such ideas."
10,000 thanks, said Affliction. "We took the two spades and hid them here, for we need them today. You'll have them back tomorrow."
Wrapping the two spades in a piece of blue canvas, Nidong tied them to the front of his saddle, and they rode on. After an hour, the sun got warm, and Christian and Big Tiger no longer felt frozen with cold. Seven Stars pointed westward with her whip. "The Donder Gaul," she said, indicating a second row of trees, which formed a sharp angle where they joined those fringing the Narangal. Shortly afterwards, Nidong left the caravan road and turned again toward the Narangal.
He insisted they should now all ride in single file, for no one is to know, he explained, how many riders pass this way. The trees by the river's brink became fewer, and presently there were bushes instead, and sand, too, and little undulations of the ground. The distant Naringal could be seen glittering in the morning sun. Nobody thought the fording would offer any difficulty. You just rode through the water and were across, or that's what it looked like until they came to the bank. Then they noticed that there was a strong current and that the earth of the steep, corroded banks gave way under the horse's hoofs. Naidong had to use his whip to force his unwilling horse onto the other bank, and no sooner were its 4 feet on the crumbling slope than there was a frightful commotion. A wild black beast with hanging tongue shot past the waiting riders and sprang with a joyful howl half onto Naidong's crupper and then with one leap into the water. "Dog!" shouted Seven Stars fiercely, but it was too late. Naidong's roan horse bucked, throwing its unsuspecting rider into the Naringal. Seven Stars screamed. Good Fortune leaped from his saddle and ran to the bank as Naidong stood up, dripping like an angry sea god, up to his waist in water. The poodle scrambled out, shaking himself, and celebrated the reunion with much barking and tail wagging. "Dog!" shouted Naidong angrily, reaching for his whip about to float downstream, together with his fur hat. "And you're a dog, too!" he cried to his roan steed, which had followed him out of the water. "Father!" wailed Seven Stars. "Are you alive?" "I'm alive, all right," answered Naidong, "but I've got a shaking. Come on," he said, and grasped the reins of Good Fortune's horse. "Let me mount first," said Good Fortune. He jumped on quickly, and Naidong led the horse across the river. The others followed without incident. "I knew," sighed Affliction, "that I should have stayed at home," but nobody listened to him. They all dismounted, and Good Fortune got busy. "Take off your coat," he said to Seven Stars. "No, I'll take mine off," cried Affliction. "Very well, both of you," said Good Fortune. He helped Naidong, who was chilled through, out of his wet clothes and wrapped him in the two dry coats. Christian and Big Tiger ran to fetch wood, and when they got back, Good Fortune had already got a fire going on the narrow river bank. "More wood," he ordered. "I must have good big logs." Christian and Big Tiger dragged over big branches. Affliction helped them, and Seven Stars stood with the horses. The poodle sat beside her, looking on. For the first time, the round black eyes, which never left Seven Stars, could be seen under the long wet locks. "Dog," she scolded him, "I ordered you to mind the sheep, but you have disobeyed me. You are a bad dog." The poodle bent his head guiltily, but not for long. He was far too pleased to have found Seven Stars again, wagged his tail joyfully, and even tried to bark, though somewhat awed by Naidong's presence. Meantime, Naidong sat on the ground, icy cold. Good Fortune emptied the water out of his boots, hung his wet clothes on branches around the fire to dry, taking care not to let them singe. He was in excellent spirits. After a while, however, he felt that something was missing and tried hard to remember what it was. "Naidong's clothes will be dry in an hour," he thought, "and then we can ride on to the Black City, and then..." Suddenly the missing object came to his mind. He felt dazed with shock and had to sit down. "What's wrong with you?" asked Naidong, his teeth chattering. "The spades," groaned Good Fortune. "The spades are gone." "And my fur hat, too," said Naidong. "It sank where the water is deepest, and it wasn't old at all. In fact, it was almost new." But Good Fortune had no ears for either comfort or sympathy. He put his head in his hands and almost wept. Christian and Big Tiger, who were dragging another branch out of the bushes, stood and stared in astonishment, and so did Affliction. "Has something else happened?" asked Affliction, gasping. "Nothing new," said Naidong. "The spades are gone, but we've only noticed it now." "If that's all that's wrong," cried Christian. "Nothing except my fur hat. That's gone, too," said Naidong. "The hat sank," said Christian. "It can't be helped, but I'll fetch the spades." Saying this, he pulled off his jacket and shirt. "What are you doing?" cried Naidong in alarm. "I tell you, the spades are lying under the water." "That's just it," said Christian, taking off his shoes. Good Fortune raised his head, but already Christian had taken off his pants and everything else and gone into the river. "The poor boy," cried Affliction. "He's lost his senses." "He's all right," said Big Tiger. "He can swim. You needn't be a bit frightened about him." "Kwee-chan," cried Seven Stars entreatingly. "You'll die. You're not a fish." Good Fortune jumped up, but Big Tiger held him back. The honored gentleman, he said, need not be in the least uneasy. There are people who can swim, he assured him, and Compass Mountain was one of these. Meanwhile, Christian made straight for the scene of the accident. The water was bitterly cold and muddy. The bottom of the river couldn't be seen, and Christian had to search with his feet for the spades. As he drew near to the western bank, the current became stronger. The water came up to his waist and was terribly cold. He had great trouble to keep from being swept away. I'll have to turn back, he thought. I must certainly turn back. I can't feel any longer what I'm stepping on. But at that moment, his big toe caught in a string, and the string belonged to the blue canvas in which the spades were wrapped. Christian dived immediately. It all happened so quickly that he didn't hear the yell that rose from the other bank. They all cried out, Night Dong, Good Fortune, and Big Tiger, and loudest of all, Affliction, who in his excitement pulled his injured arm out of his tunic. Seven Stars held her hands before her face and broke into heart-rending sobs. The poodle, who had followed Christian to the riverbank, stood still and began to bark. He was still barking when Christian surfaced several yards downstream, for the current had carried both himself and the bundle of spades quite a bit on. When he got back to the middle of the river, half stumbling and half swimming, he stood up. He staggered with exhaustion, took one step, a second one, then no more. Suddenly he felt himself dragged up. As though in a dream, he could hear the joyous barking of the poodle, but he only really came to when he was lying by the campfire and felt Good Fortune's strong hands rubbing him vigorously with a shirt. He soon recovered fully. Seven Stars was there too. She had simply left the horses to themselves when she saw Good Fortune rushing to Christian's assistance as he collapsed. "You gave me a terrible fright," said Seven Stars. "You did something one should not do." She knelt by Christian, feeling if there was still life in him, her frightened eyes full of tears. "Go get my saddlebag," ordered Naidong. "I've just thought of something." "Quick, quick," cried Good Fortune. He had noticed Naidong filling a bottle from the goatskin before they started. When Seven Stars came back with the saddlebag, Naidong took out the bottle. Then he looked around for his hat, forgetting he had lost it. "Oh, woe," he cried, scratching his bald pate. "A man can't drink bareheaded." But there was Big Tiger kneeling before him with a haddock spread out on his hands, and on the haddock lay his own fur cap. "Do me the honor," said Big Tiger politely, "to accept this poor worn fur cap, for I have no better." Naidong protested to the extent prescribed by good manners, but then accepted the gift with thanks. The cap fitted him splendidly, and now he was able to hand out the drinks. The arak revived their drooping spirits, the sun got warmer, and the fire dried Naidong's clothes and Good Fortune's pants. "That dog is a rascal," scolded Naidong. "Where is he now?" "It seems to me he's a real unlucky dog," remarked Affliction. "It's all been his fault," agreed Naidong. "He's only a troublemaker." Seven Stars wanted to contradict them, and Christian was about to say, "He's a most well-bred dog," but he hadn't time. There was the sound of fierce barking, of a man's voice, and the crack of a whip. They could hear a crunching as of bones being splintered, and then the poodle's raging attack again. "Dog!" cried Seven Stars, running in the direction from which came the sounds of strife. "Dog, come here!" But this time the poodle didn't come. Big Tiger followed Seven Stars while Christian hurriedly pulled on his clothes. Immediately beyond the thicket which bordered the river bank, there was a depression, which was probably flooded at times of high water. Reeds and sedges grew in it, and the horses had dispersed over it and were eating what they could find. Behind this hollow there was a longish hill with a clump of trees on top. It was from there that the noise of battle resounded. When Seven Stars arrived, panting at the foot of the hill, still calling, "Dog! Dog! Come here!" she saw a man in the red robe of a llama. He leaned against a tree for support, defending himself with kicks against the poodle's attack. Some 10 yards off stood a saddled horse with a light-colored tail and mane. It was tied to a tree and was pulling excitedly at its rope. "Dog! Come here!" cried Seven Stars once more. At last, the poodle left his enemy and came, exhausted and bleeding, to her feet. "Poor silly dog," she said. She looked up at the tree against which the man had been standing, but he was there no longer. He had run to his horse, untied it, mounted, and was riding away full tilt, beating the animal with his fist. "Hey, you," cried Seven Stars, "why are you riding away?" But she got no answer. The man rode down the other side of the hill, the trot turned into a gallop, and it was all Seven Stars could do to hold back the poodle, who wanted to rush after his enemy. "Be good," she warned him. "You have done enough mischief." Seven Stars and Big Tiger climbed to the top of the hill. Under the tree against which the man had leaned to protect his back lay a broken whip. The poodle had bitten it right through. When Big Tiger picked it up, he saw that the handle was finished with a silver disc. At first sight, it looked like a coin, but it had no date and no written characters, nor was there a dragon on it. Instead, there was a snake with open jaws, its forked tongue sticking out. In the bared upper jaw, the poisonous teeth showed like needle points. "What's wrong with you?" asked Seven Stars. "I want to get off the leather loop, but I can't." "You look pale. Let me try." "I'll manage," replied Big Tiger, hiding the handle in his hand. Then, when Seven Stars turned away, he took out General Wu's penknife, cut off a bit of the bamboo handle, together with the silver-trimmed end and the thong, and hid them away. "There's something strange here," cried Seven Stars. "Something to think about. Come and see." "I'm coming. What have we to think about?" "That man, he's not a Torgut Mongol." "How do you know that?" asked Big Tiger. "I know, for I know all the Torgut Mongols, at least all of them around these parts. Look here." "What am I to look for?" asked Big Tiger, and he looked down at the ground, because Seven Stars also was looking at the ground. "He's ridden back to where he came from," Seven Stars explained. "Then he's gone home again," decided Big Tiger, and he didn't want to make our acquaintance first. "Haven't I told you already he doesn't come from here?" cried Seven Stars impatiently. "So he can't have ridden home. You must think hard about this man." "I shall," agreed Big Tiger, seating himself on the root of a tree. He wondered whether it would be wise to tell Seven Stars about the snake, but it struck him that he himself was wearing a snake ring on his thumb, so that wouldn't do, he thought. Then he reflected it might be best to say straight out that he thought the man was a Redbeard. "Have you finished thinking?" inquired Seven Stars. "Yes," replied Big Tiger, but before he could say more, he was interrupted by the barking of the poodle. This time the barking was welcoming, and immediately afterwards Christian appeared between the trees. The poodle sprang up at him joyfully, and Christian pitied him for his bleeding nose and other injuries. "I'm glad you've come," cried Seven Stars. "Big Tiger won't believe me that the man who was here just now is a bad man." "You think he's a Redbeard?" asked Christian. "He's quite definitely a Redbeard," declared Big Tiger suddenly, "but we haven't discussed that yet." "We've said everything possible about the matter," Seven Stars protested, "but you can't say right off there's been a Redbeard here without first discussing it." "Oh, I see," said Big Tiger, feeling the silver snake coin in his pocket. "Perhaps the man is one of those who sit at the campfires of caravans now and again, listening to hear if anyone knows anything about Shung Ma." "But we're not a caravan," said Seven Stars. "Maybe that's why he rode away," reflected Christian. But Seven Stars wanted no further discussion. "We've finished thinking now," she said. "Let's fetch the horses." They went down to the hollow, collected the horses, and led them to the camping place. The poodle licked his bleeding nose. "Were there many casualties?" asked Affliction. Seven Stars reported everything, and when she had finished, Nidong wanted to know if the stranger had a gun. "No, he didn't," said Big Tiger. "We'll make a detour all the same," said Nidong, "for there are people who watch others, though nobody asks them to. Mount your horses, men." He put on his coat, though it was still quite damp, and his boots, which were even more damp. Good Fortune took the bundle of spades in front of him on his saddle. At first they rode along the riverbank downstream for a while. When the brushwood on the banks ceased and they had reached a strip of scant trees, Nidong said resignedly, "We are in the hands of heaven." Saying this, he left the Narangal, and the others rode after him in single file. There was no road or path anywhere. For over an hour, they rode eastward through a continuously changing landscape. But one thing was always there, and that was the sand. At one spot, it would be strewn as if shaken by hand over the plain. Then again, it formed dunes or lay in drifts at the foot of the yellow clay hills. There were tamarisks, and just when one thought the desert had begun and would never cease, a pair of antelopes ran through the valleys between the dunes, or a group of trees stood in a hollow between parched reeds and darasin grass. When they saw in the distance a row of ancient poplars spaced wide apart, Nidong turned off to the southeast. "There the Etsin Gaul flowed," he said, "in the days when heaven and earth were still in harmony." Not a word more was said, and each looked ahead eagerly, anxious to be the first to catch a glimpse of the walls of the Black City. They were no longer riding in single file. in the smoothly rising clay ground, which was furrowed in many places. The horse's hoofs left only faint marks. Big Tiger made a sign to Christian to drop back a bit. Then he said, "I've something to show you. It belongs to the man who we think is a Redbeard." He dipped into his pocket and handed Christian the silver coin with the snake on it. "I'm frightened, too," said Big Tiger, when he saw that Christian bit his lips and that his hand, which he had stretched out so confidently, was trembling. This thing was on the handle of the whip, which the poodle bit through. "Certainly the man will come back to look for it," said Christian. "He'll waste his time," replied Big Tiger coolly. "Why was he so excited, and why did he ride off without greeting us? I'd have given him back the coin." "He'll follow us," said Christian, but Big Tiger merely shrugged his shoulders as if the confederates of the venerable chief were nothing to worry about. "One shouldn't be frightened," he said after a while, "if darkness falls and the light fades away. We've resolved to be brave like the old men of the mountain." "Ah," sighed Christian, "there are people who escape misfortune by prudence. But are we such people?" "Nidong is one of them," asserted Big Tiger. "We must follow his example." "Nidong? Why Nidong? Didn't you notice how he acted and how he withstood temptation? He was firmer than a rock." "I didn't notice any temptation. Was there one?" Big Tiger urged his horse nearer to Christian's. "Is a treasure of gold and jewels, such as Prince Araptan describes, no temptation?" "It is a temptation," Christian admitted. "But..." Here words failed him to express his bewilderment, so he only said, "What on earth do you mean?" "I watched closely," explained Big Tiger. "From the moment that Good Fortune began to breathe heavily and Nidong smiled, I kept my eyes fixed on him. Nidong read only half the last page. I watched his eyes traveling along the lines, and when he stopped reading, there were at least 7 or 8 lines left, which he didn't read. Apparently, there was nothing very important on the page which the wind blew away." "And the rest?" asked Christian. "I mean the part concerning the treasure of Etsina? Did Nidong throw that into the fire?" Big Tiger nodded. "Nidong withstood temptation," he said. "He deserves the greatest respect." Big Tiger was silent, and without a word, Christian handed him back the coin with the snake. They trotted along side by side. Then the horses slowed down to a walk, for the dead forest of which Nidong had spoken began. Innumerable trunks of trees lay on the ground, half buried in sand, and one could scarcely make out where the roots had been and where the crowns, which had once been full of green leaves and the twitter of birds. The naked trunks remained, their gray bark looking like stone, and they lay as they had fallen, singly or one over the other, when the parched soil no longer held them. When the dead forest came to an end, the hard clay soil became still harder. The horses' hoofs clattered, and the walls of the black city rose before them for all to see. The midday sun was shining warmly. Nidong raised his whip like a lance. The horses began to gallop, and the ground quaked under their hoofs.